that, Kyrie. I don't have to go through what he's great at. We know what he's great at. But where would you put him to play? I wouldn't want Kyrie on my team the way he played ball. And, you know, it's like two best friends, me and you, Ryan, me and you, Butcher, we best friends, but let's not work together. So they might be best friends, but they're going to fall out. Because I'm telling you, Kyrie wants to be the man, but Kyrie is not the man. And I don't think he will play well on any team. So I called in to ask you guys, you know, do you kind of see what I'm talking about?
100%.
It's kind of like Westbrook.
No, you're right, Robin. Hey, and, you know, there's a lot of people.
Yeah. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Robin. I will say this about Kyrie Irving, because, you know, there was that guy that hit the game winner against the Dubs, you know, hit the big three in the finals a couple years ago. And you're like, man, look at that guy out from LeBron's shadow. And he's like, I got to get out of here. I want to go do my own thing. I don't want to play for LeBron. I think all of us could understand. Hey, I could understand. He wants to go play for the Celtics. Now he can lead a team. And then he's like, oh, damn, this leadership stuff's not all it's cracked up to be. And oftentimes there's people out there, Butch, and I know you've come across them in your travels. It's fun on the surface, like Magic Johnson, right? The job with the Lakers. Sounds fun to be the boss, but James Brown said it best. You got to pay the cost to be the boss, right? And Kyrie Irving, I don't think he's got it between the ears, like those leadership qualities, like a leader of men, a guy that's going to challenge the players in the right way to get the most from them. You know, some guys need a swat on the ass. Some guys need a pat on the butt, right? Like, there's a couple different ways you can deal with people. And I don't think Kyrie's wired that way, because I think ultimately he's so in love with himself that he can't see past that. So anybody else's perceived weaknesses, he's like, just be better. And it's like, no, Kyrie, you're the leader. Like, help make me better, right? I don't think Kyrie's really interested in that. I think he wants to put out the narrative that he is interested in that, because he wants people to perceive him that way. But at the end of the day, that stuff actually requires work and investing in people, right? And I don't think Kyrie's actually willing to do that.
That's really interesting. I hadn't even comprehended that. I never really had thought of that. It's funny that you say that. He strikes me more of like a musician than he does a basketball player, in the sense that, like, you know, sometimes these musicians are super tortured. They might be extremely talented.
Or an artist.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like they might be extremely talented, but with that comes like a lot of like enigmas, and you just don't know what you're going to get with the individual on an everyday basis.
Like, the burden of genius.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I guess. The cross to bear.
I've heard that, like, you know, George Lucas, for example, is clearly brilliant, you know, but he's very, what's the word? Like, he's
snarky?
No, he's very different, and he's, you know, he conducts himself a certain way, but if he was, you know, poor and he was on the streets or something, you say, that dude's just crazy.
Yeah.
But it,
oh, it's the old adage. If you're rich, Butch, you're eccentric.
There we go. Eccentric.
If you're
exactly.
Poor, you're crazy.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he kind of borderlines. I think he straddles the line sometimes, where I also just don't think that there are many different ways to lead, especially in sports. And I think Steph Curry, the way he leads, is not a traditional way. Like, he's not a yeller and a screamer and everybody get on my back and let's go, I'm going to do it. And no, he's more of like a lead by example guy, right? He's kind of a quiet leader. You know what I mean? And I not everyone could be Tom Brady huffing and puffing on the sidelines.
Sure.
And I think that Kyrie, in his own weird way, isn't a leader at all, but I also think that he alienates people that he's around.
Sure.
Right?
Well, because he came to Boston in particular under the guise of, I will be your leader, and let me
exactly
take you all to the next level. Let's go win a title. And then he's calling players out. He's not, you know, when I remember there was a moment where they lost a close game, and, you know, they're asking him about not taking the last shot. He's like, well, you got to get me the ball. You know, it's like calling out your teammates. A real leader takes that bullet, even if he doesn't believe in his heart of hearts that, like, it's on him. That's when you are the leader of the team, when you step up and you take one on the chin for the collective, for the greater good. Kyrie's just not wired that way. These guys aren't as quote unquote great as me, so I gotta lug all these other guys around. My basketball genius, right? This beautiful gift that I give the NBA on a nightly basis, and I gotta be stuck with all these other guys who just aren't on my level. And it's like, you know what, Kyrie? Like, actually, take a page out of some other guys' books, check yourself a little bit, get out of your own feelings for a hot second if you are really serious about winning. I just think, you know, at this point in his career, I think it's more important for him to get paid than it is to win an NBA title again. He's already got one of those.
I have no idea what motivates him.
Rampantly speculating.
No,
that's
I know,
right.
But I'm just saying, like he's so odd. Like, you know, I want to be the leader here. I want to be the leader on my own team. I want to do this. He's like trolling us with the flat earth stuff. Like, there's just a lot going on with him. He's different than this guy, but in many ways, he reminds me of Ricky Williams. Like, I see a lot of similarities between him and Ricky Williams, where they just march to their own beat.
Sure.
And I think that they're so extremely talented, even their own teammates get frustrated with them. Like, dude, hello? Can you just get on the same page as everyone?
Sure.
And I know that Ricky Williams had a lot of his own mental situations and things like that, so I don't want to like I don't want to sound like I'm trying to rip the guy. I'm just saying, like, they're just different. They're really, really different.
Aloof.
Aloof, yeah. But Kyrie in like a more arrogant way than Ricky Williams. Like, Ricky Williams, I think, sincerely had some mental
It's social anxiety disorder.
Exactly. Whereas Kyrie, I'm not even sure what the hell is going on with him. It might be some form of, I mean, we're seeing Adam Silver say that the players themselves have been coming to him and saying that they're not happy. And I'm thinking, like, who? What players? Well, I think Kyrie's one of those players, don't you?
Yeah, I love this from the 408. You're right. Kyrie wants to be the man, but not the leader. Doesn't work like that. That's it right there. Because leading actually takes an investment of blood, sweat, and tears. And Kyrie, he ain't willing to do the work. He just wants to reap the benefits of, quote, I led a team.
Well, and part of leading is you have to know how to connect with the people that are on your team.
And handle different guys different ways.
Absolutely. Whether it's sports, business, sales teams, whatever it is, like, you got to find a way to connect, relate, and get them to do what you want them to do in a way that manipulates the situation to where you're not being domineering. That's why LeBron frustrates so many different people, because it's my way and mine's the only way. And if you're not down with me, then you're going in the doghouse.
Right.
And that way isn't effective either.
Nope.
But the way Kyrie's doing it is clearly alienating all of his teammates.
100%. All right. Larry in San Francisco, talk to me about the Chase Center. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, I'm going to tell you, they're not going to have any problems with the Chase Center next year. Because I tell you, man, the Warriors, they won all kinds of awards just for playing as hard as they did in this finals. I mean, that was the best. I'm telling you, that was the best finals I've ever seen. I mean, even though we didn't win, I never seen a team fight that hard from start to finish. I mean, you know, every other team, they fold if they miss one star. We're missing star after star after star.
Right. No, you're right. Hey, thanks for the call, Larry. That'll build them a lot of, a lot of clout, a lot of continuity, whatever you want to call it, a lot of equity, excuse me. But at some point, like, that'll wear off. And the fans, when you're in, you know, the game 10, game 12, game 30, like the NBA Finals, the further we get away from it. I'm not saying it's right, but it's human nature. It's going to mean less and less every day.
But I think there's going to be... I think the regular season finally has a sense of urgency because we don't know what the hell to expect. And we know that they're going to have to tooth and claw and fight their way to the playoffs. So
you're
I'm
right
ready for
that.
It. And then look, Steph Curry's always going to be the draw. It's like Barry Bonds. I mean, when you're that level of beloved locally, you will always be the center of attention. So I would say this to his point about the loss. I went to a wedding, like I was telling you about, out in Livermore, and I was talking to a lot of different people that are obviously diehard Warrior fans, some of them more hardcore than others. But
Shasky, it'd be fun at a wedding.
I love to dance. Every single one of them, said the same thing. I was more... In a weird way, I was more proud of the team in defeat than I was even over the first title. And I'm like, really? And like, I kind of felt that way too, but it's weird when you say it out loud because everyone was like, I was so proud of the way they went out. Like, it was unbelievable. And I was like, man, it's incredible to see people really do appreciate what they put on the line.
Yeah, and from a neutral in all this, Butch, and just an observer, I was really struck by... I couldn't come with a scenario before the season started other than the one that ultimately unfolded that the Warriors don't win the title and the season doesn't go down as a colossal failure, right?
It's totally. And think about this.
And that's where we ended up.
It's exactly where we ended up. And think about this. KD doesn't win a championship and somehow he's the empathetic character.
Right.
Finally, he gets the appreciation and the love and the concern of everyone across the country as he loses his right leg. And loses a year of his prime and doesn't win the championship. So it's so perverted and odd and weird how it all shook down.
Perverted is the word.
It's just, man, it's weird.
As it applies to KD love, perverted is definitely the word.
I still love him.
Well, of course. Let's go to Cleve in San Jose. Go ahead, Cleve. We're going to talk to Roxy Bernstein in a hot second. Go ahead, Cleve.
Cleaver?
Come on, guys.
What's
good,
up?
Man. Hey, we got our guests ready, so just give me like go ahead, 30 seconds. Give me what you got, Cleve. Thanks for checking
in. Okay, so I was going to talk about Quentin Cook. That's it. Done. You know what? You guys say Quentin Cook can't be on the roster next year? Quentin Cook is Durant's best friend. We both agree that Durant has a great heart. He gives money everywhere for whatever he wants, millions. And he has a heart, and he wants Quentin Cook on the team.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the call, Cleve. Look, Kevin Durant knows this is a business. Like, if he wants to be Quinn Cook's best buddy, kick him a couple mil. Lord knows you got it, KD.
I got best friends. And they don't want me on their job site, and I don't want a lot of them on my job site. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the most conducive to actually working. Have you ever worked with your best friend? Sometimes the hard part is telling them, like, you're not that good.
Roxy Bernstein joins us in the Butcher Shop. Roxy, have you ever worked with your best friend?
No. Although my best friends don't tend to do what I do. They're smarter than I am.
All right. Hey, all right. On the eve of the draft, let me ask you this. This is a, kind of a big picture question that I ask. Knowing where they're at with the injuries, et cetera, can the Warriors afford to draft a, quote, project player this time around? Or does it just have to be somebody that can make meaningful contributions next season as they open up Jay Center, knowing the shortcomings they have on the roster right now?
Well, it would certainly help if they could get somebody that'll have an impact. But let's face it, when you're picking as late as you are in the first round, the odds aren't as great at the bottom of the first round that they are on the top of the first round. Now, with that being said, yeah, you can still find somebody that can help you out. But if that best fit for the Warriors is somebody who's more of a project and help you 2-3 years down the line, okay, that could work out for you also. But sure, it'd be nice to get somebody that can have an impact next year because, as we know, the more likely the minutes are going to be readily available. But you got to do what's best, and you need somebody that's going to have an impact in this organization. And if it's 2 years, 3 years down the line, but if they're the best player that you can get at that particular spot, hey, great. You know, that's what it comes down to. You got to find somebody that fits with the Warriors you're looking for.
Well, don't you think they need some scoring, Roxy? And Roxy, how you doing, buddy? I mean, who are some of the names that the Warriors could see toward the end of that first round that could come in right away and actually put the ball in the hoop? Because I know you know the college game better than I do, and I don't know who they would be targeting.
Well, more than likely, Butch, they're going to go for a wing player, right? That seems to be the consensus, what they're thinking of. But at the same time, you can't approach it where you're just going to blindly go in and say, okay, we're going to take the best player at this position. You got to take the best player available, period. And if it happens to be a wing player, hey, great. And if it can be somebody that can score the ball, which the Warriors could probably use some help at next year, fantastic. But somebody that fits the system. And there's some guys that could be there toward the end of the first round that could help. And one of the names that I thought immediately just kind of strikes me as a Warriors type player is Cam Johnson. If he's still there when the Warriors are picking, the wing out of North Carolina, to me, he's the best shooter in the draft. So he's rumored to be going around when the Warriors are going to pick late in the first round. So if he's still on the board when the Warriors are up there at 28, I think he could be a good fit just because, to me, guys, he's the best shooter in this draft. But there's some other players that could be around when you're looking at maybe a Ty Jerome from Virginia. Stanford's KZ Akpala could be in the mix at that point. But that's where the kind of the guys I think the Warriors are looking at this point, considering who's going to be available at that point. There's a guy I really like that could be available late in the first round, but I just don't know if he fits for the Warriors. And that's Grant Williams from Tennessee, who was the SEC Player of the Year, who is a lot like Draymond Green and things he can do to help you. Well, you already got Draymond, and look, it'd be great if you got somebody who could have that kind of an impact. And I'm not saying that Grant Williams can't, but maybe you do look for the wing just because of the best fit for the Warriors at this point.
And you mentioned KZ Akpala from down on the farm. I mean, guy scored, what, 17 points a game, almost 6 rebounds. From what I read about him, he's versatile. Give us, you know, your book on KZ. Why do you got him rated so highly?
Well, I got to see him play a lot, Ryan. And first off, the thing that strikes me is the athleticism. He's got length with that athleticism, and that's what the NBA people are looking for. And he's got the NBA-type body. The other thing that I liked what I saw with his development was from year one to year two at Stanford, he got a lot better. Now, he had more opportunities to play this year. The one thing that's a concern for me with Akpala is he seemed to struggle down the stretch, and maybe he was hearing the noise about the NBA and starting to try to show off for the scouts, and he tended to struggle with it a little bit toward the end of the year instead of just going out there and letting it happen and play. That would be a concern for me. But he's 6'8", long, athletic, obviously a smart kid coming from Stanford. So he's going to be an intriguing prospect. And I think the athleticism is the first thing that people will notice with KZ Akpala.
All right. So, Roxy, I know you do a ton of work with the Pac-12 Network. And so I'm just going to straight up ask you, bigger question mark, Kevin Porter Jr.'s character issues or Bull Bull's health issues?
Boy, that's a good one. You know, with Bull, I mean, certainly when you have a kid that's 7'2" and it's a foot injury, that's a concern. And you watch Kevin Porter play and the athleticism and the things that he can do, they're special. Don't get me wrong. But the off-the-floor concerns, I think, are an issue for him. And he had got suspended at USC. He dealt with an injury for a decent part of the year. If you read the stories, that the attitude was an issue for him. But the one thing that all of a sudden you have that oh wow moment is the way he can take off and things he can do in the offensive end not many other people can do. And you have Bull, who's intriguing because he's 7'2", and you don't normally see 7'2" guys shoot threes. And he can step out and do that. The one thing that I really liked also about Bull is even when he got hurt about 8 or 9 games in to the season with Oregon, a lot of guys in that situation who knew they were leaving would just disappear from school, go get themselves ready for the draft, go to some workout facility. He didn't do that. He stayed in school. He was still around the Oregon program. He was intimately involved on the bench during games, even though he wasn't playing, sitting right next to the coaches. And he thoroughly enjoyed the college experience. And you know, there were rumblings about him that he could have been an attitude issue before he got to Oregon. I saw none of that. I've talked to Dana Altman, the Oregon coach, a number of times about it. He talked glowingly about Bull Bull and the kid that he is. You're going to get somebody that he's going to go in the first round. And the upside is there. There is the question about the foot, and that's always a concern with a big guy. I would feel safer with Bull just because of the type of character that he has. And Kevin Porter still got a lot of growing up to do, and that would be a concern for me as a GM. If I'm risking my career, putting my job on the line, I don't know how confident I would feel with Kevin Porter as my first-round pick.
Roxy Bernstein, ESPN, Pac-12 Network, and, of course, member of the family here at 95.7 The Game. All right, Zion Williamson, we've seen him. We've seen him dunk. We've seen the hype. He's not going to be playing against, you know, kids at the ACC. He's going to be playing against dudes in the NBA. And, yeah, he's explosive. Just how great of a generational prospect do you think this guy is? Do you think he could possibly live up to all this hype? And how good of a fit in a landing spot do you think New Orleans is for him?
Well, I think he can definitely have a phenomenal season next year. I think he potentially could be the runaway winner for Rookie of the Year. And we haven't seen a player like him. I know people have tried to make the comp, Ryan, to Charles Barkley and some of the things that he can do. In a lot of ways, this guy's a unicorn because he's so different, and we haven't seen anything like it. And with, you know, the size 6'7", about, what, 270, with the force that he can attack the basket with, I mean, the one thing is he needs to develop a more consistent outside shot, and I do believe that will come for him. But when you see his game and everything that he can do and the way the NBA game is right now in terms of the fluidity and the freedom of movement, I think it plays right into his hands. And he's going to step in a good situation. Okay, the Pelicans get rid of Anthony Davis, but they've also got the fourth pick. They have some good pieces they got in return from the Lakers for Anthony Davis. When you look at Lonzo Ball and Ingram, plus you're getting the fourth pick, I think New Orleans is poised to be in a good spot to be a rising franchise. And in a lot of ways, for me, the draft starts at 4 because we know who the first three people are going to be, right?
Yeah.
We know Zion's going 1. We know Ja Morant is going 2 to Memphis. And we have a pretty good indication R.J. Barrett's going 3 to the Knicks. After that, I think that's where the draft starts, with the Pelicans again at 4 to see what direction they go in.
Who are they taking it for, you think?
The intriguing guy to me is Darius Garland, because we didn't see much of him at all at Vanderbilt, and he shut it down, but he's an explosive point guard. If that's the route they want to go, now they have Lonzo Ball. Maybe they don't go point guard. Is that where DeAndre Hunter fits in out of Virginia, who can do so many things? How about a Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech with the what postseason that he had, the toughness and the ability that he showed. That's where it gets interesting to me. It all comes down to which direction do the Pelicans want to go. And I think there's a number of guys in play for them at four.
Wow. Wow. All right. Let me ask you this one, Roxy. Your favorite name in the entire draft that you feel is going to outperform wherever they're drafted at. Who's that guy you feel most comfortable saying, I don't know where he's going to get picked, but in the NBA, I know this guy's going to outperform wherever he goes in the draft.
I've had a man crush, guys, on 3 years for Rui Hachimura from Gonzaga. I saw him as a freshman, and I was up in Pullman, and I flew into Spokane. I had a football game in Washington State. And on a Friday afternoon, I texted a couple of the Gonzaga coaches and, hey, what time are you guys going? And so they're practicing at 3 o'clock. So I drove over to the Kennel to watch them practice. I'm sitting there, and Mark Few's running through practice. And I'm sitting with a couple of the people in the Gonzaga administration. And this is when they had Sabonis. They had Olynyk. They had some guys, right? I mean, this not Kelly Olynyk, but they had
Zach Collins.
Zach Collins was there. Shimmick Karnowski. They had some dudes, right? And so I'm watching practice, and I'm just seeing this guy run up and down the floor, dunking with ease. The athleticism just off the charts. The fluidity he had, and I basically go, "Who the F is that? Oh my God!" And they just started laughing, and I'm like, and they're like, "That's Rui." I'm like, who the heck is Rui? And so I'm watching him this whole practice. I was just fixated by him and how good he was on the floor. And he barely played as a freshman, and he barely spoke any English when he came over from Japan. And played sparingly that freshman year, the year Gonzaga went to the national championship game, and then really blossomed last year as a sophomore and took off again this year as a junior. He, to me, is a very intriguing guy. I think that he is going to have a tremendous career. I've seen the work ethic. He's a phenomenal kid. I really like Rui Hachimura. He's 6'8", but he's got a wingspan of 7'2". He's skilled. He works his tail off. This is a guy, somebody's going to get a terrific player whenever they draft Rui Hachimura, who a lot of people feel will go in the middle of the first round.
That's a great name, too, by the way, Roxy. I want to root for a dude named Rui Hachimura. I mean, come on. Hey, another name that I'm big on, and by the way, we are talking to Roxy Bernstein, ESPN Pac-12 Network, and of course, 95.7 The Game's family, for sure. Look, John Morant, we saw him just, you know, really come to the forefront in the tournament. He can score. He can facilitate. To me, it's like, well, what's not to like? Where does Ja Morant need to get better in your estimation, Roxy? And just how damn good can he be? Because, you know, we know everybody's so in love with Zion. And, yeah, the consensus number two, that's no small thing. But I kind of feel like, and this is just based on speculation and gut feeling, that I think Ja Morant could have the best NBA career out of any of these guys.
Well, it's a clear indication that he's the pick for Memphis at two when they traded Mike Conley Jr. the other day.
Right.
And there was skepticism with Morant in terms of coming from Murray State and the competition that he faced. And we saw the explosiveness and how he dominated the Ohio Valley during the course of the year. But I think he really opened some eyes in the NCAA tournament when he showed it against the better competition what he can do. And he's a longer, I think, bigger point guard. He's 6'3". I think he's a legit 6'3", also, not the fake. Oh, he's 6'1", but they list him at 6'3". He can take you off the dribble. He can create. His jumper does need a little bit of work, but he's shown his ability to make big shots and big plays. So I think that he's got the potential to be a long standout player in the NBA. And his athleticism, the way he can defend, that's why he's such an intriguing prospect. And I do believe that the shooting will get better as he works at it. He's already works at it plenty, and it's amazing to think of the relationship that he and Zion Williamson had going back to their early days of playing together on the AAU circuit.
Yeah, that's very cool. And his name's Demetrius, by the way, which is also pretty badass. Talk about the all-name team. I mean, Rui Hachimura, Demetrius Morant. I'm in Bull Bull. I'm in on these names, Butch.
All right, Roxy, I'm obliged to ask you a baseball question because I know you're a diehard baseball guy as well. Who is your AL and NL MVPs of the first half?
Wow.
Bellinger.
It's got to be Christian Yelich in the National League, right?
Yeah, I lean him over Bellinger, even though I want to say Bellinger.
I know, and Bellinger's been so good. And, oh, gosh. The thing that strikes me, and as dominant as Cody Bellinger has been, there's a lot of support around him. Yes. I don't think there is as much support. Yeah, Ryan Braun is there in Milwaukee, and they got some guys. But what Bellinger's doing is off the charts as well. I mean, and the other thing about Bellinger is he's doing it in the field, and it's not just at the plate. I mean, I was there Memorial Day night. I did a game when they played the Mets for ESPN.
Was that the throw?
He threw out two guys that night, one at the plate, one at third base.
He's ridiculous.
And I'm, my goodness. And it's funny, even though he was playing at first base when he first came up with the Dodgers, everybody said his best position center field. And they've got him slated in right field. You can't go wrong with either one of those guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at them, I think that has to be – at this point, you flip a coin between the two. And then in the American League, you can't really go with anybody from the Yankees just because they've had so many injuries and so many guys in and out of the lineup. What the Twins have done is certainly a remarkable story. So maybe somebody there with the season that they've been having. I mean, the Minnesota Twins have the best record in the American League at this point.
Crazy.
It's phenomenal.
Crazy.
And there's no really anybody in Houston, to be honest with you, because Correa's been out for a little bit. I know Bregman's been the mainstay, and I'm a huge Alex Bregman fan.
Me too.
And they just got Jose Altuve back from injury. But maybe Rosario from the Twins, I think, would have the edge.
Mike Trout?
Yeah, I was going to say, Mike Trout's never a bad
Jack. I mean, look where the Angels are, and I always have a difficult time.
Andre Dawson, baby. Come on.
Well, I know, for the last place team from the Cubs. there's no doubt in my mind, guys, that Trout is the best player in baseball.
Right.
And, you know, the Angels, but they're in fourth place in the AL West. They're looking up at the A's, who are playing better baseball, and the A's just finished off the sweep of the Orioles at the Coliseum. And a big series for them starts tomorrow night with Tampa Bay coming to town. But the Astros are probably the runaway winner in the division, and the Rangers have been a big surprise in the AL West.
Hunter Pence out of nowhere, like the Undertaker, oh, popping out of the casket. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Paul Bearer.
I know. Hey, Roxy, next time you're on an ESPN broadcast, you're more than welcome to utilize some of my material here, but Cody Bellinger is Carl Yastrzemski 2019. Launch angle and everything. Look at how Carl Yastrzemski used to play the game, and look at how the stance, the uppercut, just everything about him. Now, he's a little skinnier, a lot skinnier than Carl Yastrzemski, but I see a lot of similarities. My grandfather brought that up to me a couple months back, and I've been rolling with it ever since.
Well, I've got some ESPN games this weekend. I'll be in St. Louis for Albert Pujols' return as the Angels go to St. Louis, so maybe I can try to work in, you know, launch angle and spin rate and tie it into Cody Bellinger.
And Butcher Boy.
Well, I got a shout-out to my guy out in San Francisco, Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky. He's the one who told me this the other day.
Roxy, he's so desperate for attention and validation. Like, I literally, 4 hours a night, 5 days a week, I just sit there and go, interesting, that's an interesting way to go about things, but it's all good.
I love you, Roxy.
His heart's in the right place, Roxy, right? I mean,
everybody's trying to put their heart in the right place. Right?
For sure, man.
I'll be listening to y'all and watching you on that ESPN, man. You're doing great stuff, Roxy. Love you.
You the man, Roxy.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
appreciate
thanks,
it. Have a good
Roxy Bernstein, one of the good ones.
Pujols going back to St. Louis?
Dude, I was
that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess that's his first time back, huh?
I mean, they only play every 4 years or whatever because of the divisions. You know, you got to be in the right division.
You like interleague?
So I'll get to that in a second.
Sorry.
But then, like, you figure he would be every 8 years because the Giants play in New York every 8 years. So I'm assuming the Angels would play in St. Louis every 8 years. So this might be his first, last, and only trip in an Angel uniform to St. Louis.
Emotions run high, bro.
Do I like interleague? I hate interleague. And this is why. Like, there's nothing special about it anymore. Like, for me,
the novelty's worn off.
It's completely worn off. Like, I would rather it be regionalized. You've heard my rant on regionalized
baseball.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So
it's been a while.
If it was my way, I'd have them. Okay, let's unify the rule book. Okay, everybody wants to go to the DH. I'm cool with that, but let's change the divisions up. Let me see a division, like the Southwest division, which would be Seattle, Oakland and San Francisco, both LA teams, throw in San Diego, and then you can either give us the Denver, the Colorado Rockies, or you can give us the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then make a Midwest division and have all the Midwest teams all in there, and make it super centralized. Like if
so
you have
totally change the game.
Three divisions.
I'm just throwing out this. So totally change the game.
I would. I mean, okay. Right now, the viewership is the lowest it's been. The attendance is the lowest it's been. The viewership regionally is really good, but nationally, it's horrible. Embrace regionality. Like last year, the best series of the year for the Giants was the Oakland A's Giants series. Like those were the most compelling. Right now, like outside of the Dodgers series, well, what makes you lean forward?
Right. Yeah, not a lot.
I mean, so that's the way I would do it. I know a lot of people disagree with me, but. You know,
and we get better ratings than Giants Dodgers. I mean, let's be real.
I mean, especially when they're all blowouts.
All right.
I think Yelich is my MVP too, though. Even though I love Belly.
Yeah, Yelich is pretty damn good, man. He's incredible. You know, and look, I think if we love having the conversation early in the year, like who's the MVP, this and that, and you know, we'll sit here, Butch. You know, in August. Mike Trout will still lead the American League in OPS.
100%.
We'll be there in September. Hey, look, Mike Trout leading the American League in OPS. He's the best player in baseball. It doesn't matter what the record is. It's the most valuable player. Like, you're the best damn player on the planet. And they basically should just hand that award to him every year in the American League.
And they should. And then the Angels should hand their general manager position to somebody else who can actually build a roster around the greatest player of this generation.
Yeah, that's a damn shame.
Damn crying shame. Here's the damn shame, that we don't get to see him more. That's the damn shame. You know what I mean? Like the fact that they're not on television enough because they're not good enough and they don't draw. Like it sucks that we don't get to see him more often.
Yeah.
Think of how many TNT games you get to see with LeBron James on it.
And honestly, you know, I don't want to indict Mike Trout like for not being more flamboyant. Like it's not Mike Trout's responsibility to be the face of Major League Baseball. As long as he's not... like scoffing at, you know, like, we're, you know, oh, I'm not a role model, this and that. No, he's a quiet, mild-mannered dude.
Goes about his business.
Right. He's not, you know, he's not doing things to misrepresent the interest of Major League Baseball. He's not an outspoken guy. Like, he strikes me as kind of a shy guy, I guess, and doesn't really want to, you know, to wear that around all the time. And it's hard to fault a guy for that. Unfortunately for Major League Baseball, that is your best player and, quite frankly, your best bet to market your game around that kind of star power. But he's just not the kind of guy that, you know, people are like, ooh, what did Mike Trout say tonight?
Well, I would take the Peyton Manning route if I was the Major League Baseball. Like, find out how Peyton Manning went from, like, an aw shucks dude who could barely talk in press conferences to, like, the Jimmy Johns dude.
The quirkiness about him.
Exactly. Like, find a way to make it unique to sell him to America. Like... he's perfect for America. He's a hardworking, you know, he's a white guy, so he's not like a European or an Asian player who you have a difficulty saying the name. Like, I think one of the reasons why baseball has had trouble marketing baseball locally is Miguel Cabrera speaks English as his second language, right. Even though he's one of the most feared players of the 20th century, like, or the 21st century. Albert Pujols as well. Like,
Sammy Sosa forgot English on Capitol Hill.
Exactly, but... but again, Mike Trout speaks English, and it's a name that's easy to say. It's not like it's Shinjo or Ichiro, guys who are speaking their second language. Like, this should be an easy sell for us as Americans to wrap our arms around an American-born player like Mike Trout.
No, that's a good call, man. And I just, you know, there's baseball faces plenty of issues about, you know, staying relevant and, you know, remaining America's pastime. It's too much to put on Mike Trout, like, to be that savior.
It's not his onus to save the game. Right. And I hear people say, like, Tiger Woods has to save golf. No, he doesn't. Like, that's the sport's duty. The player's duty is to go out there and be the best player he can be. Right now, not only is he a first ballot Hall of Famer, you look at his WAR, you look at all his numbers across the board, he's gunning for best player of all time.
Yeah. Any idea, and I'm just asking this out of the blue, any idea how the U.S. Open did ratings-wise? Do you know?
The U.S. Open rated really well. The Sunday actually did a fantastic job, and Tiger had nothing to do with the telecast.
Yeah, see, that's... I watched, and you and I were down there. I mean, there was the difference on Thursday between, like, the gallery and then the Tiger Woods gallery.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much of an obsession and an interest with Tiger Woods, and I know it's that way nationally, but, like, the PGA, there's a bit, even though it's kind of the... you know, in a lot of ways, the stuffy gentleman's game. It's, you know, a rich man's game, whatever. Not really, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that play golf, but the people that don't play golf kind of like to perceive it that way. But right now, I think golf has a ton of young star power that they've actually done a really good job marketing. I mean, even guys like Ricky Fowler, who haven't won a damn thing. And by the way, U.S. Open highest rating since 2013. Thank you, Lucas. I mean, there you go.
At a time when more people are cord cutting and more people are streaming, and those numbers you don't necessarily get credit for.
Right. And keep in mind, I consider myself a golf fan. I'm not obsessed with the game like you are, but I play golf quite a bit, and I love watching golf. I didn't know hardly anything about Gary Woodland. And I'm texting you, asking you, like, what's up with G. Woody?
Yeah.
I'm feeling this dude, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then by Sunday, I'm like, bro, I'm a Gary Woodland fan.
How could you not be?
Like, I'm watching videos with him and the special needs girl that walked the track with them a couple weeks, you know, about a year ago.
Yeah,
like,
she hit that putt in front of so many people.
Out of the sand, too.
That was incredible.
And nailed that putt.
Incredible.
Yeah, so I became a Gary Woodland fan. But see, that's it. Like, new stars just popping up all the time. And then you got Brooks Koepka, kind of like the villain of this now. Tiger Woods still in the periphery, who just rocked a green jacket.
But this is the thing with baseball that drives me nuts. They have a ton of young stars. Like, literally, there are stars everywhere. Ronald Acuna Jr. Like, how are we not talking about this guy at a national level? He's basically Ken Griffey Jr. Like, that's what he is. A younger, like, superstar center fielder that can run and hit and has flair. Like, dude, the dude is swagged out. You see the chains. He's got the, you know, the different wristbands and things like that. And this dude plays a unbelievable center field. Like, he's Andrew Jones with the glove. And at the plate, he's a gap-to-gap hitter. He can hit bombs. He can do everything. He can run like the wind. Why is he not getting any love? It drives me nuts. The kid up in Juan Soto or whatever his name is up in Washington, 20 years old. Like, he's as marketable as Bryce Harper was. We heard about Bryce Harper for years.
Are we talking about anybody on a national level right now for Major League Baseball?
No. The only national narrative we talk about is how Mike Trout's not a national narrative.
Yeah.
That's the only narrative.
And then, Lucas, you said Bryce Harper. That's what I was thinking too. Bryce Harper. We talk plenty of Bryce Harper.
Yes, we do. And I'm guilty of that. No question. But again, there's so many great players. Like, who's this guy that just got called up by the Astros who's hitting bombs in left field? Like, how do the Astros have 1,000 prospects ready to go hitting bombs? It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Because they were garbage for, you know, a decade and they filled up their farm system. Coffers and they were overflowing,
but they developed.
And now they're
them.
Reaping the benefits.
Oh, you're right.
And they developed.
They've done a great job at that.
Absolutely.
You know.
Hey,
Alvarez,
San Francisco Giants. I'm looking at you.
Look at the Dodgers. Dodgers have been winning and developing players simultaneously. Like, we bring up Bellinger. To me, Bellinger is going to be one of the more marketable players because he plays in Southern California. He plays for the Dodgers, which is a national entity. He plays multiple positions. And he hits bombs and plays great D and has a great arm. Like, those are the da-da-da, da-da-da. Remember when, like, Sports Center used to do all the great plays? Like, he is made for YouTube, Twitter, whatever the little videos, ESPN, you name it. He's perfect for that.
Whatever the kids are doing on the Snapchats with the Googles and the Vines.
Exactly.
All right, I'm done. All right, coming up on the other side, final hour of the Butcher Shop, 888-957-9570. I know with the Giants being porous this year, I'm sure even if you were watching baseball, you're not watching as much. A's fans, I mean, where's your interest with this team right now? Do you still feel like they can make a move? You want to talk some baseball? Lines are open, 888-957-9570. Joe Shasky, Ryan Covey, just bobbing and weaving in the Butcher Shop.
5-7, the game. The Butcher Shop continues on 95.7 The Game. Here's Ryan Covey and the Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky.
All right, final hour in the Butcher Shop. It's a West Side Wednesday. You know what it is. 888-957-9570 is the number. We got a couple of open lines if you want to jump on in and join the conversation. Joe Shasky, Mike Conley on the move. We know that the Grizz are in a state of rebuilding right now. They traded Marc Gasol before the deadline last year. They're a team going nowhere fast. Jay Crowder, Kyle Korver, and Grayson Allen, also the number 23 pick, head to the Grizzlies for Mr. Mike Conley and a protected future first-round pick. So there you go.
Well, I guess Rubio's a free agent, if I'm not mistaken, and so they have a void to fill. I think this allows...